It has been a turbulent decade here in Vancouver, to say the least.
Check me out, y'all.
Halford and Brough.
In your area.
That's right.
About to cause mass hysteria.
Sportsnet 650.
Hughes a drop. He scores.
I've never seen a young defenseman like Quinn Hughes.
It's halftime.
Horvat with two. Horvat with three. Patrick.
Look at this. I'm the coach.
Hey, it's halftime.
Now Besser off the drift one. Accepted by Patterson. He scores.
It's halftime.
Playoff atmosphere. Look at the boys go. Crank it up. Let's go.
7 o'clock on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Sportsnet 650 studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. We got a lot to get to in the second hour of this program. Mike Tannier from Football Outsiders is going to join us in just a second here. Before we get to Michael, we need to take care of some business. I need to tell you about the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Fine folks at the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. You can experience the Dilawri difference today if you visit your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Jason, we're going to dive back into the hockey momentarily before we get to the footballs. Can you check out the Regal Grooming Lounge daily poll question? It's up on Twitter now, at Sportsnet650. Please read the question and give the results.
Just a real house of positivity poll question. We're always so positive about the Canucks, even though they lost to Detroit. I mean, come on, folks.
Every day, positivity.
Whose play has been more impressive over the first three games, Connor Garland or Oliver Ekman-Larsson? Just two terrific acquisitions for this
team.
Some
say you can't even pick one.
Ekman-Larsson is winning this poll question at 57%, and I think a lot of people replying have been saying, I'm going to pick Ekman-Larsson because of the preseason expectations for both players. That's why I picked Ekman-Larsson. Who did you vote for?
Garland.
You never say who you vote for.
I always do. Connor Garland. I knew things about his game. Like, I knew how he played. I knew there was a certain style to it. I'm more impressed by the shiftiness of said player. The start stops, the ability to beat guys with really short bursts of quickness. Like, I think he's one of those guys that can generate chances on his own, which I thought,
when you're that size, you have to be like that if you're a good player.
Yeah, and to put it this way, I even think his skill level is higher than I thought it was going to be. I thought he'd be a little bit more grinding. Don't get me wrong, he's an absolute grinder, especially when he goes into the tough areas. But I'm just thoroughly impressed overall with everything that he's brought.
It's a pretty nice bank shot.
It was great. Okay, that is the daily poll question brought to you by Regal Grooming Lounge, a 5-star level barbershop experience. Visit them online at regalgrooming.ca. To the phone lines we go from Football Outsiders, our NFL insider, Mike Tannier, here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing well. Where would Geno Smith rank among those two hockey players you were talking about?
Not close. You know what? Geno came in almost exactly as expected.
Connor Garland will sometimes attempt passes more than 20 feet.
We said we weren't going to subject our listeners to forcing Mike Tannier to talk about the Seahawks game. So we'll just leave it at that. We knew what we were going to get when the backup quarterback came in. It was a very gross Sunday night football
game. I thought
he
was fine overall. He was better than expected. The fumble was bad, but overall, man, that was a bad quarterbacking Sunday nighter.
If that was better than you expected, I do not want to know what you expected.
I didn't expect anything.
Okay, on the subject of expectations, good segue here. I had high expectations for the Ravens and Chargers game on Sunday, but I also had high expectations for the Chargers. I made them my lock of the week. I liked them at +3 going into this game. That did not turn out well. It leads off your week 6 recap up at Football Outsiders right now. Ravens ready to challenge the Bills. And I guess after everything that we've seen over the first 6 weeks of the season, that is the story now, is that I think it might be Ravens and Bills and then the Chiefs slot in somewhere underneath them. But we got to start with the Ravens. That was a thorough performance in a whipping of the Chargers on Sunday.
Thorough performance, very strong on defense after not looking great on defense against the Colts on Monday night. Very good pass rush, very good run defense there. Excellent on offense. You know, Lamar Jackson shows you something different every week. On Monday night, he's like, yeah, I can come back. against an opponent, two scores down. I can throw along the sidelines. I can throw from the pocket. This week, it's like, yeah, I can game manage. You know what? I can just distribute the ball where we've got a lead. I don't have to run for 150 yards to beat an opponent that's down. You know, we can just do normal offense stuff, and we can win this game. Special teams as well. You know, the Ravens always have Justin Tucker. The return game was good. Chargers have a real problem where they don't have a kicker right now. They miss extra points. Their coverage teams aren't very good. They're not ready there. So you really see the Ravens demonstrating that, yeah, they're number two with the Bills and probably not that far off of them, where the Chargers are demonstrating, hey, you know what? Going from, you know, an exciting team to like a real playoff team is hard. Every little flaw gets exposed. A couple of the flaws got exposed in their loss to the Ravens.
Another game I was looking forward to was Arizona versus Cleveland, and yet again, yeah, it wasn't a very competitive game. What was the story here for you? What was the biggest story? Was it the fact that the Cardinals won this game handily and remained the only undefeated team? Or was it the Browns, all of a sudden, they're 3-3 and not looking too good?
Both. You know, I didn't write about the Cardinals much because, to be blunt, I didn't see enough of the game to really comment on them. I got a chance to watch it this morning, and this was a team playing without Chandler Jones because of COVID, playing without their coach because of COVID, playing without their center, Ben Hudson, their veteran center. So there were a lot of reasons to say, at least they're going to tail off against a pretty tough opponent here. The Cardinals did not tail off. They stopped on the accelerator. They're showing that they just have so many weapons on offense, that they have enough players on defense to play well on defense when their offense is crushing people. And so they keep telling us week after week that, yeah, we belong in this conversation with the Buccaneers, with the Packers, with the Rams, and the NFC. Browns are just beaten up by injuries. Football Outsiders had them coming into the season as not a particularly strong team, as a sort of a wild cardish team. Some people had them higher than that. You're seeing now there's not a lot of depth. They're losing guys. Baker Mayfield's playing on a bum shoulder, and it's all kind of snowballing for them. And like the Chargers are showing, yeah, they can do a lot of things well, but there's a difference between doing that and being the kind of team that can win the AFC.
I know this is really novice analysis here, but it certainly seems with the Browns that they can beat bad teams. They just can't beat the good ones.
That's all it is, because they run the ball really well. They can set up play action really well, and they can rush the passer very well. So when you're facing the Texans or opponents like that, yeah, you can run the ball down their throat, sack the quarterbacks. That's a win against a bad team. Against tougher teams, it's like, well, can you get the ball downfield to your receivers? They can't really do that. If we block up Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney, what's your secondary going to do? It's going to get exposed. So that's kind of what you're seeing now. That the Browns can probably turn that into a resume where they win 9 or 10 games. And that's great for the Browns historically. It's just not the expectations I think a lot of people had for this team as they made the playoffs last year and looked like they were ready to take some big next jump this year.
Got to put a little shine on the Jacksonville Jaguars, who went over to London, Tottenham Stadium, and got their first win of the season, snapping one of the longest losing streaks in NFL history. Now, everyone, you know, when anyone talks about the Jacksonville Jaguars, it's not necessarily about Trevor Lawrence. It's all about the head coach, Urban Meyer. And some are saying, all right, this will lessen the pressure a little bit. The hot seat isn't as hot. You brought up a good point here, though, in the recap, and that's that if Jacksonville was going into all these games and getting obliterated and had no chance of winning, there would actually be less pressure on Urban Meyer. Right. But I watch this team, and they're clearly good enough to be competitive. So then you start looking at the head coach and saying, what mistakes or what shortcomings do you have that are preventing this team from getting the wins? I mean, and it was a nail-biter in London on Sunday, the early game. I'm curious how this is going to play out now for Urban Meyer, because they've got that win. The expectations get raised a little bit. I wonder how much longer he might survive, because you look at this team and you're saying, maybe they're not as bad as that record and that losing streak indicated.
No, they are not, and they should be competitive with these other teams. That's kind of what I was getting at. You know, you should have been able to put a fight into the Texans in the opener against the Broncos, who are showing their true colors these days. But there's not a lot of easy wins on the schedule coming down the road. I mean, yeah, you do get the Texans again, you get the Falcons, but he's taking the heat off for now. You know, we flipped the script on the lap dance and all the stuff he said at the beginning of the year and all of that stuff. So he's safe for now. When you get to December, all those college openings are going to happen, and he's going to get a wandering eye. There will probably be other tough losses, brutal losses. If the locker room's starting to quit on him now, it'll probably be really quitting on him by then. And Shad Khan and the Jaguars are going to look around and say, okay, Raiders need a new coach, So they're going to be going after the Brian Daboll's of the world. By then, the Giants are going to be looking for a new coach, I think. I think that's pretty obvious. Bears are probably looking for a new coach. Should we just keep going with this, or can we fire him now or ask for his resignation now and get into the coaching carousel 3 weeks early and start contacting people? And that's the next window for Urban Meyer. So we don't have to talk about him every week right now because, yeah, he's got to win right now. But we'll revisit him sometime after Thanksgiving when everybody starts really appraising their coaching situation.
Who's been the best quarterback in the NFL this season? Is it the old guy, do you think?
Goodness. Maybe Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Simple. Stafford also belongs on the list there. You know, he had like a weak game against the Cardinals, has come back and has rolled right now. But I'll give it to those two because Brady's doing everything you could ask him to do. He did look like his thumb was bothering him a little bit on Thursday night against the Eagles. But that's the great thing about having a great team around you. And that goes for, I think, both Brady and Stafford. You have that off game and it's barely noticeable because, hey, your defense steps up, your screen game, your running game, your offensive line step up and make you look better.
I was wondering if you might say Dak Prescott. Are you a believer in Dak and the Cowboys?
Very much a believer in Dak and the Cowboys. I think they belong in the conversation with the Rams, with the Cardinals, with the Packers, with the Buccaneers. That's the combination, and the Cowboys in terms of front runners, because they can do just enough on defense, and that offense is really good. If you look at that first half, with the calls that the Patriots were getting, it looked like Prescott had to complete a 20-yard pass, then it was holding, so it was first and 20, complete a 22-yard pass. You know, get into the end zone, but they decide to mark it at the 1-yard line, then dive, and oops, he fumbles. So, yeah, that's a strong team. He's an outstanding quarterback. He's having a phenomenal year. And that offensive balance, running, passing, getting to all those different weapons is going to take him really far.
Hey, Mike, I wanted to ask you this question, and it doesn't have anything to do with the games this weekend. Do you think anything more is going to come of this email scandal?
Well, they're doing their best to close the door on it. You know, like the NFL's opinion on this stuff is, okay, there's stuff in the emails. We sacrificed John Gruden, and now go away. Make this go away. They're going to do that. I imagine there's going to be other leaks. There's going to be other issues there. My guess is, overall, they're going to do a good job of making sure that we don't see some of the things that John Gruden did. And frankly, I know it's very cynical. A lot of people on Twitter were like, oh, wait until we see what all the other coaches say. These guys don't email a lot. And when they email, they don't say a lot. I mean, I've emailed with coaches. They say, yeah, yeah. That's it. They give like two-word emails because they don't like typing. They don't like computers. That's not who these guys are. So I'm not saying that like the NFL is filled with people who are progressive politically and would never say anything racial or homophobic or stuff like that. A lot of these guys just didn't put it in writing. So whatever's left in those emails, we'll hear about it. There'll be issues, but I don't think we'll see anything as explosive as what we just saw.
We're speaking to Mike Tannier from Football Outsiders here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Mike, as I'm firing through the games yesterday, I stumble upon the Chiefs and football team game, which I wasn't paying a ton of attention to. I assumed that the Chiefs would take care of business, and they did, 31-13. But I couldn't help but notice every time that I was watching Red Zone and the game would flick on, it seemed as though there was yet another turnover by the Chiefs and the Patrick Mahomes-led offense. Is this what the Chiefs are now? Can they return to previous form, or has the armor been dented a little bit? Have we seen that the Chiefs aren't the perfect team and the perfect offense? Maybe they're a little too sloppy with the football. Can the Chiefs return to previous form?
Yeah, I think the sloppiness is the issue, because you look at those turnovers. Mahomes trying to do too much when the pocket's collapsing, takes a hit and jettisons the ball straight into the air. That's just sloppiness. That's correctable. That's reminding you are not a video game character. You do not get another life if you throw an interception. Tyreek Hill slipping on the turf monster in Washington in that delightful playing surface there. That's the kind of thing that can be a little bit fluky. If you correct those things and you just get them to be a little bit more like a bunch of mortals playing a real football game and not NFL blitz, you will still have an incredible high-powered offense there. So it's something they have to work through. They were lucky, despite the final score, they were lucky to get that win in Washington. They were lucky they're facing Tyler Heinicke with nobody to throw to, and a team that is kind of going south before our eyes. But they've got to get this corrected. I think they can, but I think it's more of a process than, you know, them flipping the switch and saying, oh, you know, we're all better now during the 2021 season.
That Bears-Packers game is getting a lot of attention this morning in large part because of Aaron Rodgers' remarks, both during the game, yelling at the Soldier Field crowd, and then afterwards where he confirmed that, yes, I do own this team and these players and this building to a certain degree. Did you have any other takeaways aside from Rodgers' late-game heroics in that one? The Bears actually put up a pretty good fight for a majority of the game. It looked like they had the Packers where they wanted them, but then it was classic Rodgers snatching victory away from the jaws of defeat at the end there.
Yeah, you know what? Weird flex, Aaron Rodgers. You beat the Bears. The Bears are not good. You needed a big game from your defense to do it. And talk to me about how you are going to find a way to own the Rams, own the Buccaneers, because you weren't playing well enough yesterday to do that. You know, you weren't playing. It was a solid win, no question about it. You have a very injury-riddled team. Your offense kind of disappears for like a quarter at a time, despite your brilliance, Devontae Adams is brilliant. So, frankly, Aaron Rodgers, if you were some 23-year-old, we'd be ripping you right now. We don't want to hear about how you own the Bears. That shouldn't be on your mind right now. It should be how are you going to compete with the teams you have to beat this year, and I'm not sure the Packers are equipped to do it.
Finally, before we let you go, Monday Night Football, the Bills, I believe they're -6 at Tennessee tonight. When I looked at this, I kind of felt like it might be a clever play if you're going to get the Titans at home with that many points, but then I've seen the Bills' scores the last few weeks and how they're rolling. Give us a preview of the game and what you're looking at tonight, Bills-Titans, Monday Night Football.
The Titans are a bad team with a great running back and a weak, easy, creamy schedule. The Bills are a legitimately great Super Bowl contender, balanced team that has faced a couple of tough opponents in addition to some weaklings along the way. The Bills are going to roll. They are far superior to the Titans. I'm taking the -6. No filler, no props, no parlays. This just seems like a gimme win for the Bills, and I think they're going to cruise.
Mike, you're the best. Thanks a lot for doing this today. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the game tonight, and we will talk again next Monday.
Absolutely. Take care and enjoy your week.
That's Mike Tannier here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Mike, of course, is a presentation of the Clayton Public House. He's our Monday morning quarterback. This football season, make it the Clayton Public House, 188th Street and 56th Avenue, Surrey. Visit them online at theclaytonpub.com. A good question you asked about who's the best quarterback in the NFL right now, because the one thing you can look at, there is a ton of candidates. Prior to the weekend, I might have said it was Justin Herbert. I was ready to throw him in the conversation. He did not look good. Mm-hmm. And then the Ravens, coming off a game in which Lamar Jackson made a case for being the most explosive quarterback in the NFL, he didn't do much against the Chargers on Sunday, and he didn't need to. And then you've got Patrick Mahomes, Dak Prescott, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. Kyler Murray. Am I forgetting anybody?
Well, it's
so
not
many
Mahomes
candidates
right now, but in large part because his receivers aren't helping him out very much.
You know who number two
the
in the
Chiefs
NFL
still,
in passing yard?
Chiefs are still so dangerous, though. Like, can you imagine the Chiefs sneak into the playoffs because they played sloppy football this year.
All year.
Like, that's basically what it is. Like, you can see the talent, and maybe you're not all that impressed with the defense, but you can see the talent on offense. They're just turning the ball over so much. Yeah. Imagine you get to the playoffs and the Chiefs maybe sneak in.
As
and
a
you're
wild
like,
card?
Yeah, we're so excited. And then, like, who do you get? The Chiefs.
You,
damn it!
You brought it up last week. Like, is Patrick Mahomes officially in hero mode? And by that, I mean I can do anything in any situation, even with one or two defenders draped on me. He had one of the picks that he threw against Washington was exactly that. Fumbled snap, picked it up, had guys draped all over him, tried to make a hero throw, got clipped as the throw, his arm was cocked back, and just a duck, like 30 feet in the air and about 2 feet deep. And it was not good. I do wonder if they can, as Mike said, correct up really easily, because sloppiness, sometimes it's an inherent trait of your football team. Like, we're bad at keeping the ball and keeping possession.
We're talking about the Chiefs offense here.
Right.
It was one of the most clinical machines in NFL history.
I feel like that's something that as the season goes along and they start, we need victories. We're in a playoff chase. We need to tighten up.
But like, let's say the Chargers hosted the Chiefs in a playoff game. I'm picking the Chiefs.
Yeah, you are, because of Patrick Mahomes and because he's done it before. We got a lot more to get to on the program. We're going to take an early break here. We're going to come back, circle back into the Canucks talk. We're going to take a look ahead at this week and the remainder of this road trip, because there are some very interesting games. Tuesday in Buffalo, the most immediate one. Thursday in Chicago against a beleaguered Blackhawks team. We'll look at all the major storylines to come, where the Canucks are going to be at the tail end of this trip now that they're halfway through. Lots to get to. This is your home of the Canucks. Don't go anywhere. Keep it on the dial. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. /7:24 on a Monday. I hope it's a good day for you. It's Monday. Usually not. I haven't checked outside. It's every time I go to get something from the break room, I can just see out the front doors, glass doors, so I can see what's, and it's very, very dark.
Well, it's only 7 in the morning.
I know.
When you went out last time, so
I'm still not used to it.
What happens is that in the wintertime, as it approaches winter, the days are shorter.
Oh.
So that might not just be cloud. That might actually just be the fact that the sun hasn't come up yet.
Huh.
Yeah. How long have you been living here? You used to live on the equator, right? So all the days were the same.
Right. Why are we not funding this?
Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Where are they, you might ask? Oh, I'll tell you. North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, and Burrard Acura. That one's on Terminal Avenue. Dom's got a smirk on his face. No, shaking his head. What's wrong?
I thought you were going to make a jab at the Vancouver School of Arts,
Van Arts.
Did you ever figure out what that place was actually called?
Van Arts.
That's it? That's what it says on the outside?
That's the name of the school, Arts? Van Arts.
Van Arts, a school for the arts.
A school for painting vans.
That's right.
In Vancouver, yes.
Okay, what's this Kucherov news that we
our
got
time,
in the break?
Baby, back to back. That's how we do it.
That was Kucherov.
Our friend Eric Erlandson, who writes The Lightning Insider, tweets out that he's hearing the initial word on Nikita Kucherov is not positive, and surgery could be involved. Assuming that's accurate, Eric writes, I'd expect him to miss some time moving forward. Should know more later today. So we'll see what the surgery is, how long it's expected to keep him out. I'm sure lots of people on Twitter have some funny jokes about maybe he'll be ready to go by game one of the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera.
They don't even need the cap relief right now. They are operating within the confines of the salary cap.
Yeah, but then they can add Eichel.
Yeah, they can add make a huge trade now as he sits out the entire season.
I love
returns in the playoffs.
So I was going through the Sportsnet NHL website doing some prep for the show.
As you do.
At 5:59 this morning.
When do the Canucks play again?
Buffalo. Wow. This is a long road trip.
Oh.
Here's speaking of Buffalo. I love this headline. Sabres don't want to retain salary in Jack Eichel trade. No kidding.
You don't say.
No kidding. They don't want to retain salary in the for this superstar player that they once hoped, like just a few years ago, they were hoping would turn the franchise around. I really wonder when this Eichel thing is going to get solved, or at least when there's going to be a decision. I guess there's been some movement in the fact that the Sabres are allowing teams to look at his medical records. They just got to make a decision soon.
Mm-hmm. Emily Kaplan, ESPN, along with Greg Wyshynski, does most of the digital coverage there for the NHL. She had something last week where it sounded like they thought an Eichel trade was close to being consummated.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe there was as many as 5 teams that were still in the running for him. So it sounds as though the thaw is on.
Did the Sabres pull out?
I don't know.
There was nearly a consummation.
There was.
And then the Sabres pulled out.
They said, not so fast. No, this is going to be... It's funny because when you talk about the Sabres as a team,
right.
You don't really...
And that must have been them busting their cherry. That was a tough one.
That was a tough one.
Yeah.
Focus, boys. Focus. When you talk about the Sabres now, you really don't talk about them as a competitive entity, although they are 2-0 on the year, because the Eichel situation hangs over this entire team. Oh, and then you look at their roster, and it is just, it's this collection
of has-beens and a bunch of never-wills. I guess the Rasmus Dahlin is a bright, shining example, and Dylan Cousins and everybody else, but there's nobody watching their games. They're drawing under 50% capacity. They are winning, albeit two games to start the season, smoking Montreal and then beating the Coyotes on Saturday. And now you've got a Canucks team, which, let's put it this way, I don't want to say that there's any must wins or have to wins, and it's not even close to that yet. But on this road trip, Saturday's loss, while the Canucks played well, they got goalied by Thomas Greiss, and they didn't get a win in a game that they should win. This game against Buffalo is another game where they should win because Buffalo is an inferior talent. You want to start collecting points on this road trip because they stole one. Let's say, call it what it is. They stole one in Edmonton in the first game. They played okay, but going into Edmonton, down 2-0 in the third period and scraping a point.
And Mike Smith botched a Quinn Hughes muffin shot. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why they got a point out of that.
The win against Philly, you don't care that you gave up the shootout point because it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things.
I think they deserved those 2 points.
So they got the win.
Yeah.
The loss in Detroit, I can't call it disappointing. The result was disappointing. Of course, you always want to emerge with a win, but they drastically outplayed Detroit. What you don't want is a letdown on Tuesday in Buffalo, because then you have Thursday in Chicago and you don't know what you're going to get from the Blackhawks.
I think they'll beat Buffalo. I think Buffalo's had their 2 wins of the season, right? And they're probably feeling pretty good. Like, they're not in desperation mode. So I think the Canucks will probably beat Buffalo. The game against Chicago is a little bit worrying because the Blackhawks are, what, 3 games into the season? And people are calling for Jeremy Colleton to be fired, Stan Bowman to be fired. The Seth Jones acquisition does not look good early on. The team seems to be a bit of a mess. The thing that's worrying maybe from a Canucks perspective is that I think the Blackhawks, especially their star players like Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews, I think they really like Colleton. Like, they keep on saying, like, this guy is a good coach. We just got to play the way he's telling us to play. So
after the loss to Pittsburgh on the weekend, Kane went to bat for him.
Yeah.
Mark Lazarus, who we're going to try and get on the show to preview that Blackhawks game on Thursday, said that he understood what Kane was doing. Like, he stood up for his coach. But he also said it felt like Kane also knew that that's what you have to say in that moment.
Yeah, we'll talk to Laz. The Chicago Blackhawks, as a franchise, have just fallen so hard over the last few years.
Yep.
Of course, there was all that off ice, the sexual assault allegations. Like, there still doesn't seem to be any closure on that. A lot of the same people are still around the organization. And on the ice has been not as bad as off the ice, but it's been pretty bad. A couple headlines that caught my attention on the Sportsnet website, sportsnet.ca. This one was funny. And we've had Mark Spector on before, and we like Spec, but this is a funny headline, and I get that he doesn't write the headlines, but early Oilers results have fans believing this season could be different. They've played 2 games.
Yep.
They blew a lead to the Canucks, and then they beat the Flames on Saturday. I get it. The Keith CeCe pairing has been fine.
Yep.
You know, like, the Keith CeCe pairing has been kind of like, to the Oilers, what the Ekman-Larsson-Myers pairing has been in Vancouver, in that people are like, wait a minute, this might not be so bad. Like, that's what it is, but the Oilers, to me, are still the same team. Like, they're relying on Connor McDavid to do most of the heavy lifting, most of the fast lifting on offense. And they have been extremely reliant on 39-year-old goalie Mike Smith for results.
Who has looked really good.
Yeah, except for that goal that he allowed for Quinn Hughes. He's faced a ton of shots. I don't know if you want to be writing this column after a win over Vancouver at home, where you didn't even win in regulation, and then you beat the Flames at home.
And that Flames game, for an opener, home, Battle of Alberta, Saturday night, Hockey Night in Canada, primetime game, I thought it was flat. It really didn't have as much spice as I figured it would be. 5-2 win for the Oilers, in case you missed it. Their second win in a row, which has everyone in Edmonton talking. The McDavid hat trick as well. I get why Speck wrote it. Mm-hmm. It's funny that they're doing it after two games.
I would also just like to comment that I don't think you should have to throw your hat on the ice when the third goal is into an empty net.
Interesting.
Yeah. I just don't think. I think it should be an optional.
Have you ever thrown a hat onto the ice?
No.
I never have either.
I don't even think I've had the opportunity. Like, I've never been sitting down below when a Canuck has had a hat trick. And I think, here's the thing with me and hats. Mm. Like, I don't have many throwaway hats.
Right.
Right? Like, if I'm wearing a hat, it's because I really like the hat. And, you know, with the horse face and the horse head and all that, like, hats can be hard to find, like, one that, like, you're happy with. Like,
yes.
That you like the fit. I think you would see me, like, if there was an ISO cam on me, it would be me, like, removing my hat and putting it in my jacket. Like,
So
no one would be like, throw your hat, man. Like, what, you don't like the team? I'm like, I'm going to hide my hat and get it out of here.
Now
I'd have to smuggle it out.
I'm racking my brain right now. I don't think I've ever been at a game where the opportunity arose either.
I threw a teddy bear on the ice at the Vancouver Giants game.
That's an entirely different thing.
But I threw my arm out. Yeah. They you can actually go and buy the teddy bears at the game.
Right, you don't have to bring your own.
And it looked like you could really whip this thing, but you couldn't. It was actually quite light. And I was like, I'm gonna get this to center.
Jason immediately went and got Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have tarred my rotator cuff. And the bear did not get anywhere near the ice.
So another headline that caught my attention.
Yes.
We should do this, by the way. This could be a segment, like NHL headlines on sportsnet.ca.
Yeah.
Report, Maple Leafs to ease up on dress code restrictions for game days.
Yes, I love dress code talk.
Okay.
It's my favorite thing.
Now, this has a number of factors in this story that I can't stand. First of all, I hate this discussion anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The people that are so ardent that the NHL eases up its restrictions are like, let these guys show their personality. I'm like, okay, fine, do it. Like, but I'm not going to, I don't care about this debate. Like, no. I just don't, right? No. Like, I do not care whether they can wear whatever they want to the rink. Mm-hmm. The thing that really, really bugs me about this story, though, is I know what it's going to bring. I know what it's going to bring. It is going to bring so many stories about, look at what Austin Matthews wore to the rink today.
Yep.
Not a suit, but like this, like what is he going to wear? Is he going to wear like fancy sweatpants or something
what is Austin Matthews' interpretation of business casual? I can't wait to see.
It's going to be hours of footage on the Maple Leafs walking in. And like, as you know, the Maple Leafs have eased up restrictions on the dress code. Yeah. And this Maple Leafs team is really showing its personality.
Because you know Austin Matthews loves fashion. So
dreading it. Now, yeah. I know I've become an old man.
You have, like, that, instantly, like, in the middle of that segment.
Like, you know what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the Leafs and Kyle Dubas is so progressive, he's going to really let his players show their personality because he thinks that's important.
My favorite development in all of these is, you remember in the bubble when every team essentially said, you know what, you don't have to wear a suit. You know, we understand that you only have a finite amount of packing space available in your luggage and whatever. If you want to wear whatever you want to the rink, to walk from the Sutton Place Hotel to the rink, that's fine. Everyone's like, yay, no dress code. And then the Minnesota Wild instantly were like, but we're going to make our own. And then it was like they couldn't do the suits. So they had, like, it was like trousers and a golf shirt.
It's like they were all... Like, they looked like an insurance salesman convention.
Yeah,
which, basically, by the way, every team then mimicked, but no one made a deal out of.
I know. Here's the thing. Just don't pay attention to this story. Don't write about it. Don't talk about it, which we're guilty of right now. And don't ever try and have some sort of standard to which to hold. Because you're going to end up with... The thing is like, people don't have a lot of nuance into how to make it funny. Mm-hmm. It's always serious. And it's like the headlines you say. It's like, Austin Matthews shows his quote-unquote personality with fashion. I'm like, well, yeah, that's why you wear clothes. Is you can either dress demure because you don't want to put off any sort of thing about your personality. You don't want to wear bright colored suits because that's not you as a person. Maybe you want to wear grays and blacks and whites like I am.
Yeah. Or that would be my nightmare, actually, if they restricted the dress code. I would love just suits. Like, you could just go to a suit guy and be like, make me a bunch of suits. Yeah. But as soon as the dress code gets restricted, then all of a sudden you're like, uh-oh.
Now I got to wear stuff.
I got to put together some outfits now.
I'm wearing a boa.
Let's talk about, in the next segment, let's talk about Philip Zadina's comments about Connor Garland. I wonder what people think about that.
This was another big takeaway from the game on Saturday in the aftermath. Philip Zadina, none too happy with the hit on Garland. I don't even understand what his problem was to begin with, but he had some very choice words for one of the newest members of the Vancouver Canucks. We'll play the audio and discuss it. That's coming up next on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
The official financial sponsor of Halford and Brough is ZLC Financial. It's your one-stop solution for all your financial and retirement needs in Vancouver at ZLC. They're all about trusting the process. There are five steps to the ZLC process: analyze, plan, implement, review, then repeat it. To learn more, visit ZLC.net. And remember, advice is only as good as the person you ask.
Hockey is behind the goal of Yaro Halak. Connor Garland lays a big hit down low on Zadina. Adam Ernie's going after him. There's a whistle because Zadina's down on the ice, not getting up. The linesmen have to get in. Here's another big scrum in the far corner as all of the Red Wings come in.
I mean, you know, like the midget like he is, it's pretty normal, you know, that he's reversed it, because I don't think he's that strong enough to just battle him in a corner like one-on-one and just do like that stupid hit, but it is what it is. Probably how the person he is on the ice. So
7:44 on a Monday, Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. That audio you just heard, first the Connor Garland hit on Philip Zadina, second Philip Zadina talking about Connor Garland and Connor Garland's hit. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Okay, we needed to talk about this part of the story at some part today. In the intro, and for the better part of the first hour and 44 minutes of the show, we spent a lot of time talking about Connor Garland, his impressive play so far, how he's really established himself as a certain type of player for the Canucks over the first three games of his very short Canucks tenure. On Saturday, in Detroit, Garland laid what first was called an elbowing major. Upon review, later revealed to be a reverse hit on the young Red Wings prospect, Philip Zadina. Zadina reaching for the puck, got knocked, not cold, but he was splayed on the ice. In the aftermath, as you heard on the call from Brennan Batchelor, big scrum, big kerfuffle, as we mentioned, the original five-minute major, for some reason or another, and it's still inexplicable to me, ended up as a two-minute penalty. Now, having watched the hit multiple times, it was a good old-fashioned reverse hit.
There wasn't direct head contact either.
As a matter of fact, of all places to do it, doing it in Detroit, home of Nicholas Cronwall and the Cronwallian reverse hit, seemed kind of apropos to me. I was very upset. I'll table my complaints about the officiating because I already did that earlier in the show. Listen to the podcast if you want to hear it. But then came the second part of this story. It's just Zadina, in his post-game presser, referring to Connor Garland as a midget. We played it. You heard it. It raised the ire of a lot of people. So I want to preface everything that we're about to say with, we are very cognizant of the fact that that term has been classified as pejorative and a slur. Hockey Canada went so far as to remove it as an age category. So, this is the second time, though, in as many games, where someone has gotten on Garland for his stature, because it was Travis Konecny in the Flyers game. You saw him mouthing the words, "He's an angry little elf."
Right. From the movie.
Elf.
Which was called Elf.
Right.
Zadina, his comments, you know, I know everyone was focused on what he called Garland, but more than that, his comments were ridiculous.
Yes.
Absolutely ridiculous. He's talking about how it was a stupid hit and Garland won't take him on one-on-one in the corner. Well, if the puck was traveling to the exact corner of the ice, then I'm sure Garland would have been there. Garland, what he did was stood his ground in a hockey game.
Yeah.
And Zadina, what he did was he was reaching for the puck and he had his head down, which you aren't exactly taught.
No.
When you're growing up playing hockey, keep your head up. Try not to reach for the puck, because when you reach for the puck, sometimes you get in trouble by guys that stand their ground. I think it does. This whole episode brings up a question of where is the line when it comes to chirping on the ice?
Hmm.
I think...
Because let's put it this way. No, it's very clear that that's the thing that guys go after Garland for.
Well, obviously, he's not very tall.
Well, Zadina's Bert Hutt just texted in. Longtime listener, Bert Hutt. Zadina's only like 4 inches taller than Garland.
I know.
Right? I feel like if you're going to pull that card out, and Konechny's no bigger either.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like Konechny's a giant. It's very strange.
I feel like if you're self-conscious about your height, you will use every inch.
Yep.
Okay, continue. Sorry, I cut you off.
Well, I just want to know where's the line? Like, we all know that obviously racist or homophobic chirps are completely unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where I remember, I'm not going to say the word, that I was called in a game a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like a beer league game, and well, someone dropped the F bomb on me. I'm like, are you not, you know what I'm talking about, right?
English word for cigarette, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was like, dude, like, do you know what, like, decade this you're in? And I couldn't believe it. I was kind of just like, I was almost flummoxed, and I felt like I was
just
like...
Was that the F word he used, flummoxed?
It was not the F word that he used. Oh. But obviously that stuff is unacceptable now. But I don't think we should get... And look, I think calling someone a midget is definitely... it's not quite racist or it's not homophobic,
it's
but
still derogatory.
It's derogatory and unacceptable. But I think we can make fun of, you know, these are professional athletes. They're confident dudes. They're hyper competitive. If someone, for example, were to make fun of me on the ice for being like skinny or super slow on the ice, like, I'm okay with that because that's reality. Or, for example, if someone were to make fun of me for being like super handsome, right? Like, which happens
all the time.
I mean, like, I get it. Like, this is the cross I have to bear in life. But
fine. Take another shot at me.
But aren't most people kind of cognizant of the things that, like, they're not like, maybe they wish they were a little bit taller. I feel like this is a Skilo song now.
Also wish you were a baller?
Maybe if they wish they were a baller, or maybe they wish
a
they
girl,
weren't.
I could call her.
Yeah. but don't we have a sense of humor about ourselves now?
It's not about having a sense of humor about ourselves. I don't think the issue, like calling someone an elf, I don't think is an issue. That's fine.
I don't know. It's very anti-elf.
That's fine. Elves don't exist.
What?
Really? Like, by using a derogatory term against someone who is physically impaired, that's where you draw the line.
There is.
Yes.
There is,
said that.
You know what? Yeah. And a classification needs to be made here is that if we're being accurate, Zadina didn't chirp him during the game.
No.
Zadina went, got showered, got changed, had some time to chill out, mm-hmm. got to the podium, and said it. Now, I think a lot of people brought that. They're like, okay, this seems completely, one, like, not really representative of what happened on the ice. Like, no one's challenging you mano a mano and then turning it down and then taking you for a cheap shot. Like, you put yourself in that position. Two, he had enough time to think things through, sit down in front of a microphone, get questions from reporters, and not go that route. The Konechny thing was entirely different.
I just think it, you know, like, are we going to get to the point where we're not allowed to say mean stuff to our opponents? Anything that hurts their feelings?
No. I don't think that's the point here. I don't think anyone has an issue with chirping unless you're an NFL owner.
No, but where do we draw the line on chirping? What's acceptable to chirp?
Well, that's a
Some people will say that it is never, ever, 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 ever acceptable to chirp about what someone looks like.
Yes. That's true. And you know what? It's going to be really interesting to see where this goes with regards to officiating on the ice. Because I don't want to draw a straight parallel, but what we're seeing in the NFL right now with the taunting rule, a lot of that is designed to keep guys from getting in each other's faces, talking smack, and then eventually...
Because certain owners don't like that.
Right. They want... like, so now, I mean, you see how far overboard they've got. If you make a tackle and stand up and stand over the guy, they're throwing the flag. And a lot of it is because they don't even want it to get to the point where you're jawing at a guy. And they're trying to cut that out.
But I will say that there's a different culture in the NFL. There's a different culture in football than there is in basketball or hockey.
But the overarching culture outside of it, the one that is watching, I would say, police dogging it to a certain degree, they are going to wonder, like, at what point do you start cutting out? Like, the post-whistle scrum, where guys are hurling all sorts of insults at one another, yeah. Right? It's not going to be long before we get another incident like what we saw with Andrew Shaw in the playoffs and what we saw with Ryan Getzlaff, where someone says something in the heat of the battle that's either picked up on microphone or picked up on camera, and that becomes, they start dissecting that, right? And I will be curious to see if the officiating steps in at some point and decides, I don't know whether it's going to be arbitrarily or not, but what's acceptable and then what's not during a game. Or the other way that they do it is they start finding it in the aftermath.
Right.
And that, and I'm not even, I don't know how it's going to go, but I think it's an interesting thing to look at because I think the NFL, what they've done with taunting this year, sent, I don't like the message, but it's very clear what they wanted to get across. We don't want all the, you know, the jawing after a play, getting in each other's faces, scrums. They wanted to eliminate it altogether. Make a play, get back up, and go to your huddle.
Mm-hmm. We got a text into the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650. Lots of texts, in fact.
Yeah.
Unsigned texts. Detroit just seems like a bunch of whiny babies. That's embarrassing for Zunina. I'm glad to have a team to despise again. I think the Red Wings were fired up because of what happened in their previous game.
I also think that this year, they're trying to make a push forward to not be a doormat and not be as irrelevant as they've been. Because some of it seemed a little forced.
Yeah.
Some of it seemed like they were, like, you know.
But we've seen we've seen this happen to the Canucks before, right?
Napoleon complex, dare I say?
No, but we've seen this happen to the Canucks before, right? Like, numerous times in the history of the team. Something happens in a game. The fans and the media go, why aren't you guys sticking up for each other? The next game, they really stick up for each other. The Canucks just happen to be the opposition that the team faced. Yeah. And we're kind of like, what's going on with the Red Wings today, right? It was a reaction.
We're up against it for time. We got to take a quick break because we have a very exciting interview coming up next. The general manager of the Abbotsford Canucks, Ryan Johnson, is going to join us next. That's coming up just on the other side of 8 o'clock. So here's what you're going to do. Sit down. Stay in your car. Do not touch that little knob on your radio. Just leave it right here. This is your home of the Canucks. It's Halford and Brough on Sportsnet 650.
He's an angry elf.